John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, September 19, 2011. Intensive settler attacks and Israeli soldiers kidnapped 9 Palestinians in the West Bank. Details and more are coming up. Stay tuned. A number of armed Israeli settlers invaded on Monday morning an olive orchard in the village of Deristia near Salfit in the northern part of the West Bank. Nazmi Salman, head of the village council, confirmed that settlers chainsaw around 500 trees that belonged to Daoud Harb. The farmer told media that settlers destroyed all his 6-acre farm and cut all his olive, fig and almond trees. The villagers said that they believe the settlers came from Rivava settlement, less than 1 mile away from the land. The Palestinian news agency Wafa reported that Israeli settlers opened their automatic machine gun fire at residential areas in the town of Borin near Nablus in the early hours of Monday morning. However, no injuries were reported. Ghassan Douglas, in charge of the settlement's file in the northern West Bank, said that settlers also attempted to invade the nearby village of Awarta but failed. Settler violence has increased during the past month, especially after the Palestinian Authority declared its intention to go to the United Nations to ask for international recognition of a Palestinian state. In the meantime, the Popular Committee Against the Wall and Settlements in the village of Beit Ula near Ramallah organized a civilian night watch to protect the village from possible settler or military attacks. Coordinator of the committee, Isa Lamla, said that unarmed guards will be on duty 24 hours a day, especially after the Israeli authorities handed evacuation warrants to some of the villagers. The effort is part of a larger campaign organized by a number of villages in the Ramallah area to protect the villages from settler attacks. The campaign is called We Refuse to Die Silent. In the meantime, Israeli troops kidnapped 9 Palestinians in 3 West Bank locations. Palestinian media sources said that an Israeli military force invaded Hebron area in the southern West Bank and kidnapped 5 residents. Eyewitnesses said that troops broke into a number of houses in Al-Arub refugee camp north of Hebron and kidnapped three residents and took them to unknown destination. Troops also kidnapped two others from the town of Doura and from Hebron city. Meanwhile, Israeli soldiers kidnapped another resident in Al-Shawabra village near Bethlehem and three other residents in Jenin. That was just some of the news from Palestine today. For more updates, please visit our website www.imemc.org. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Fassis and me, George Ismail.
On the 15th of September, Palestinians in the D.C. area marched from the State Department to the White House in support of the upcoming vote in the United Nations to recognize Palestine as a state. Here's what one of the marchers had to say about his family's experience in dealing with the Israeli occupation authorities.
I'm Palestinian. My family is originally from Gaza. I am from Jerusalem. I was born and raised in Palestine. I was in Israeli prison with trumped up charges. I'm a member of the Washington Interfaith Alliance for Middle East Peace, where a group of Muslims, Christians, and Jews working together for peace and justice in Palestine. I know many of us are here today. This is really about theft. It's about theft. Theft of my land. My family lost all their land twice. Everything that they had. All their belongings. Once in 48 we were expelled from West Jerusalem. Another time in 1967. It's really about plain American and decent values anywhere in the world. It's about the people in Gaza who are not allowed to have spaghetti because it's a security infraction according to the Israeli lies. Very soon, the Palestinians will submit a request to be a full member of the international community, which is a long, long awaited thing. To reclaim a small part, 22% of historical Palestine. We all should support them.
About time the United Nations recognized a Palestinian state in the 1967 borders. Israel had no right to plant settlers outside their own country after the 1967 war. How would you like it if settlers took your house? How would you like it if they kicked you out on the street and stole your country? Anyway, the reason for the September 15th march on the White House in D.C. and on the United Nations in New York City was to warn the United States not to veto or otherwise interfere with the Palestinian statehood resolution in the United Nations. Iraq, yesterday, multinational forces of Iraq, meaning the U.S. military, is reporting the death of a U.S. soldier from a non-combat related incident somewhere in northern Iraq. Afghanistan, today, NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an insurgent attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Sunday, NATO is reporting the death of three soldiers of unspecified nationality from IED attacks in undisclosed locations in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday, NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an IED attack in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, last Thursday, a suicide bombing at the funeral of a pro-government tribesman in Lower Deer District near the Afghan border killed 40 people and wounded 68. Iraq, yesterday, thousands of supporters of anti-U.S. cleric Muqtada al-Sadr held protests in Baghdad and other cities demanding restoration of basic services like electricity. Baghdad, Iraq, today. Three prisoners were burned to death and 30 others were seriously injured in a fire that broke out in a Baghdad prison, a security source reported. Baghdad ongoing. The notorious U.S. occupation base, Camp Victory, is finally closing down after more than 8 years of occupation. U.S. troops are supposed to be out of Iraq in less than 100 days. The insurgents are not. Maybe it should be called Camp Defeat? Mr. Barack Obama, Bush could not win in Iraq, and no conqueror has ever won in Afghanistan. Now is the time to pull the plug, cut your losses, and bring all the troops home today. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On Saturday, 17th of September, thousands of protesters swarmed into Wall Street with the intention of occupying it indefinitely.
We want to shut down Wall Street!
Although a march on the New York Stock Exchange was blocked by police barricades and cops protecting the immediate area, protesters swarmed the surrounding area. A police closure of the streets surrounding the Stock Exchange would be very disruptive if it continues into the work week. With Wall Street getting ever richer and everyone else getting ever poorer, people have had enough.
Banks got bailed out, we got sold out! Banks got bailed out, we got sold out!
I'm just corrupt. How a corporation can have a larger voice in the American public is totally beyond me. And I think as far as solutions, we're here to discuss solutions and to come up with ways to move forward in this.
I'm pretty frustrated. I thought we voted for change in 2008. Obviously, we didn't get that.
The police barricades couldn't be everywhere. At number 55 Wall Street, protesters were able to confront a party full of the rich and powerful. Plastic horns are loud and their sounds can carry for blocks like it did during the IMF and World Bank protests last spring. Earlier, at about 10 a.m. on Saturday, as things were starting up, police surrounded a park full of demonstrators as if to try a mass arrest, but they left when protesters stayed.
No, usually I've been one who's kind of been disheartened by protests, that usually they end up being small, random groups of people and broken chants and people who listen when the fucking cops and army scares them away. And so this is really inspiring. I hope I see everybody, this many people back tomorrow and all week long, and that it continues to grow, because that's amazing.
Protesters did in fact manage to stay the night and march again on the morning of Sunday, September the 18th. Again, protesters swarmed the street. Again, the Stock Exchange was blocked off. Let's see if the cops can get away with all those barricades and workday rush hour traffic. The Occupy Wall Street protests in New York City continue today for the third straight day. Again, the cops barricaded the central part of Wall Street. Again, protesters marched around and around the police lines, placing the security zone under siege. While police checkpoints backed up the stock traders and their traffic, the march is so disruption. Again, the police tried to set up a fenced-off, so-called free speech area. Again, protesters refused to enter the trap. All morning rush hour, protesters marched in around Wall Street and Broad Street, while swarms of cops had to follow them. In this sort of thing, the police themselves usually do the work of blocking traffic in the process of keeping the protest on a sidewalk. This is just as effective at blocking traffic as it would be if the police disappeared and the protesters took over the street. Imagine the gridlock on Wall Street. In addition, as of 1 p.m., the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down over 220 points. Would this have something to do with the effect of having to run picket lines, siege lines, and police barricades on traders' state of mind? Four protesters were arrested in the Monday morning protest for wearing masks in violation of a nasty New York mask law. and one more person was arrested for allegedly jumping a police barrier and supposedly resisting arrest, according to police spokesman Paul Brown. Two masked protesters were reportedly arrested Saturday for trying to enter a building used by the Bank of America, again according to police spokesman Paul Brown. At a general assembly of protesters in Zuccotti Park, protesters made three major decisions today. One, they will rename Zuccotti Park to Liberty Plaza. Two, they will remain in Liberty Plaza indefinitely. Three, they will maintain the space and be responsible for its upkeep. That means the protest will continue for the entire week at least.
In response to continuing high unemployment and an anemic economy that threatens to turn into a double-dip recession, President Obama addressed a joint session of Congress and the nation on September 8th to propose a $447 billion package of tax cuts and new federal outlays designed to boost consumer spending and create jobs. Prospects for passage of Mr. Obama's jobs legislation appear dim as congressional Republicans oppose the president's plan to fund the jobs bill by raising taxes on the rich. Specifically, the White House wants to impose new limits on itemized deductions for individuals who earn more than $200,000 a year and families earning more than $250,000, which they expect to generate $467 billion needed to fund the new jobs bill. The declining rate of taxation on America's wealthiest citizens and profitable corporations is one major reason for decreasing revenues to fund federal programs. A new report by the Institute for Policy Studies titled Executive Excess 2011, The Massive CEO Rewards for Tax Dodging, highlights stark problems of fairness in the U.S. economy. The group's 18th annual investigation of CEO compensation found that of last year's 100 highest-paid corporate executives in the United States, 25 took home more in pay than their company paid in 2010 federal income taxes. And of the 25 companies that paid their CEO more than they paid in taxes, 20 also spent more on lobbying congressional legislators than they paid to the IRS. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Scott Klinger, an IPS Associate Fellow and co-author of the Executive Excess Report, who summarizes the findings of the investigation and the urgent problem of growing income inequality in America.
We first noticed this trend last year in 2009. There was one of the highest paid CEOs that made more than his company, Occidental Petroleum, paid in income taxes. And we thought that was horrendous. We couldn't believe it. You know, here, all the things of value that a corporation gets from the government, from an educated workforce to infrastructure to regulatory programs that assure their products and services are safe, even things like patent protection and courts to protect intellectual property. All those things of value, companies feel quite comfortable telling the government that's worth less than the services of one man or woman who leads our company. And so we began to look at that as a theme coming into this year, and the proxy reports tend to come in right after the first of the year in the spring. And we began to see that more and more companies were paying their CEOs more than they paid in federal corporate income taxes. And by mid-year, when pretty much most of the results were in, we looked at the top 100 highest paid CEOs in the United States and found that 25 of them received more in compensation in 2010 than their companies paid in federal corporate income taxes. We think that's a shameful number. And most of these companies, virtually all of them, were quite profitable. On average, they had $1.9 billion in profits. So these aren't companies that were, you know, struggling and didn't have any income to pay taxes on. It was that they were very profitable but found ways to avoid their taxes. The other thing we looked at was sort of how does this happen? And one of the things we thought about is that companies are really writing the tax codes or telling Congress what to write in the tax codes. And we found that 20 of the 25 companies spent more on lobbying Congress than they paid in federal corporate income taxes, and 18 of them had higher investments in corporate political campaigns than they paid in federal corporate income taxes. And lastly, one of the numbers that we track every year is the ratio of average CEO pay to average worker pay, and last year it skyrocketed. It was up to 325-1, which was up from 263-1 in 2009. So that was one of the largest jumps we've seen. It's still not back to the record levels before the recession in 2007, but it's getting awfully close.
Scott, another issue that this country has seen unfold over recent decades is growing income inequality in the United States, where we have the gulf between the rich and the poor widening to the greatest point of any industrialized nation in the world right now. And I wonder how you feel your investigations into tax rates of big corporations and the gulf between worker and CEO pay relates to growing income inequality.
Well, it's certainly at the crux of the economic problems that we all face right now, including the problems faced by business, because the problem that businesses are facing aren't that their taxes are too high, it's that they have no demand for their products. And the reason they don't have any demand for their products is because the middle class is getting poorer and poor people are getting poorer, and people don't have money to spend at businesses to buy things, to create more jobs with their demand. I talked to a business person today, a small business owner, and he said, you know, if he had 100 people in his neighborhood by his business, he'd much rather have all of them making an average of $80,000 instead of having three make $10 million and the rest make $10,000. You know, that's the sort of scenario we have, you know, and he kind of followed that up and said the rich can only buy so many toasters. So the fact that we have all the pooling of money in very few hands is not a system that serves anyone, including business.
Scott, just a final question before we say goodnight, and that is, in this election year coming up, one of the big debates is going to be over tax policy, whether rates on wealthy corporations and individuals should be raised even to the levels they were back during the Clinton administration. The Republicans and their corporate allies seem determined to freeze things in place, not to move in increasing them in any direction. And I wonder, where do you think public opinion stands on the idea of taxing the rich at higher rates here as the country faces this deficit crisis that a lot of these same Republican and conservative politicians are screaming about on a daily basis?
Well, I think the tide is really turning, and I think the polls I've seen suggest that more and more people believe that the rich should pay more, and taxing the rich is an appropriate way to preserve Social Security and preserve the kind of community investments and jobs for teachers and policemen and firefighters that we all have come to count on and support. And I think there's incredible outrage when companies that are making billions of dollars in profits end up not paying any taxes at all. So we're not in favor of raising the rates on corporations, but we are in favor of dramatically closing the loopholes and making sure that all companies pay a fair share and that large corporations end up paying more like what they used to pay in terms of supporting the services the federal government provides.
That was Scott Klinger, Associate Fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies and co-author of the group's new report titled Executive Excess 2011, The Massive CEO Rewards for Tax Dodging. Find a link to the report and more on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
On the 13th of September, as Congress was coming back into session, activists from the Transportation Equity Network and from a faith group stormed the Republican Party's South Capitol Street headquarters. Officially, the purpose of the protest was to demand that Speaker Cantor support Obama's jobs bill. But unofficially, there were far more demands, such as raising taxes on the wealthy to a level that would balance the budget, and a federal transit initiative to rival the interstate highway program that former President Eisenhower set up.
I want to give her story about how transit is so important to her life.
I'm Linda Hopkins, off on New York Voice, Buffalo through. I'm a transit rider. I had to quit my job because I needed transit to get to places and to work, and I couldn't do it. I cannot visit my grandkids because there is no regional transit to get to where they are, even though they live close to me. Doctor appointments are impossible in the suburbs. It takes a long time. It's a difficult situation when bus companies cut routes, cut times buses run, cut services all around, Saturday, Sunday, weekend. It's just a very difficult thing. And please do not cut Medicare, Medicaid, so we elderly and disabled won't be able to use transportation if we don't have the money in our retirement or in our times of need. So that's my message.
Yeah! The entire protest got to the GOP's headquarters on South Capitol Street by riding the Metro, and a ride of less than a mile from I Street took far longer than it should have, One of the protesters was in a wheelchair. It was not easy for him to get around and maneuver through Metro's notorious elevators.
We were coming here from I Street, down at the Capitol Suite Hotel. We had to take the subway. We had to work around getting elevators to the end of one section to get to around, up, we went down to go over. It probably took us four times as long as it should have. The sidewalks are horrendous because wheelchairs are not, they make these cute little wheels on the front that get stuck in all kinds of little divots. Accessibility for the handicapped is hard, and we just want to use the transportation and a way to get where we need to go.
Now, we all know how much money it's costing just to fix Metro. You can imagine how much money it's going to cost to fix transit everywhere. While Obama's jobs bill really didn't do a lot to talk about how to pay for everything, talked about kicking things down the road to the super committee to make decisions about other budget cuts, the protesters who stormed the Republican Party's headquarters on the 13th of September had a better idea.
Balance the budget, tax the wealthy, that's how we make America healthy. Balance the budget, tax the wealthy, that's how we make America healthy. Balance the budget.
I don't suppose the Tea Party is going to like this suggestion from the protest either.
Less cars and more buses and trains.
This is what democracy looks like.
You heard that. Politics in the United States has now reached the point that transit advocates who have the support of one of the political parties, the Democrats, find it necessary to storm the headquarters of the other political party, the Republicans, in order to have any chance of being heard.
Chocolate City, this is a movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Thumping.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip, to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart, it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right-wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister. Strom Thurmond, similar. Confederate, state-loving George Bush ministers. Overseer plantation mentality results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs. And now they want to come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Walmart Free is an emerging activist group of D.C. residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in D.C. by 2012. Walmarts in D.C. will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
That's right. Walmart's all about making the rich, namely their own CEOs, richer, and everybody else, such as the people who work there, will work at any other retail outlet poorer. On the other hand, Walmart's having a few problems getting into D.C. They wanted to begin construction on a Walmart at the old Chevy dealer on Georgia Avenue this past spring. Last December, they said it was imminent that they'd have a lease. They still don't have a lease. They still don't have a lease, and an effort by Folger Pratt, the landlord, to jump the gun may have gotten them into bigger trouble. On the 8th of September, Folger Pratt got caught beginning illegal demolition on the historic car barn behind the old Chevy dealer. The stop work only lasted a day. They blamed it on having the wrong address on the permit. But a few days later, reported on the 13th of September, a historic preservation application was formally filed for that old car barn. The Historic Preservation Review Board has received and filed the application, which designates the Brightwood Street Railroad Company car barn, 5917 to 5929 Georgia Avenue, as historic. And that means they can't do any more demolition without a historic preservation review. It sounds to me like it's going to be very difficult for Walmart to build there. They can't fit the Walmart if they don't remove the car barn, but that pending application to raise the car barn is now on hold due to the historic preservation review. On Friday, the 16th of September, people all over the United States staged protests against the execution of Troy Davis, which will take place this week unless either the governor or the Supreme Court intervenes. Seven out of 9 witnesses have recanted their testimony. Here's what a speaker had to say about the case and the politics surrounding the case at the march in D.C. on the 16th of September.
9 people testified that they saw Troy Davis kill Officer McPhail. 7 have since recanted and said that was not the case. 7! That means they're going to kill someone on that kind of basis? When you can't even put Dominique Strauss-Kahn on trial in New York? Yeah. Are you kidding me? We know the truth. Troy Davis is on death row in Georgia because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong color skin with the wrong bank account. He doesn't have that going up against him. He's not on death row. And for that reason alone, he should not be there, and we have to fight to make that happen. Look at the people coming out for Troy. Desmond Tutu, Jimmy Carter, John Lewis. Here's a name for you. William Sessions. If you don't know who that is, he was the head of the FBI in the Reagan administration. That means he makes Rick Perry look like Karl Marx. And even he has stepped forward and said this execution cannot happen. So we've got the wind at our back right now, and we have to do it. Poverty's at a 20-year high, and we know following economic hard times comes racism, criminal justice, and the death penalty to divide us against each other. If they can get away with killing Troy, then what hope do we have? What hope do we have against what's coming? We have to stand up for Troy right now because our lives depend on it. You got Republicans cheering the number of executions in Rick Perry's Texas. You've got Democrats as quiet as church mice. If we're going to build this movement, it's got to come from us. We're the ones who are going to have to make this happen. And I just want to end with one thing. I got phone calls today when this rally got out from 2 people you might have heard of. Their names are Tommy Smith and John Carlos. They were the people who raised their fist at the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. Tommy Smith from Georgia, John Carlos about to move to Georgia. This is very close to them. They both wanted to express their solidarity, and John, who really does like to talk, gave me a couple of sentences he wanted me to read to you all today, and I'll end with that right now. This is what John Carlos said. He said, I've lived a lot of years, and I've seen many things, but I didn't think I'd live long enough to see a lynching return to the state of Georgia.
Ooh.
This has to end. Troy Davis must be free, and I'll raise my fist as many times as necessary to make it happen. Thank you very much. Free Troy Davis.
A state of Georgia, there's one other thing you might want to think about. You execute an African-American man, in this kind of situation, there might be consequences. You don't have a monopoly on rope. Before you tie a noose for Troy Davis, you might want to think about who might be tying one for you. On the 10th of September, protesters gathered outside the Ronald Reagan building to oppose the National Policy Institute, a racist white nationalist group meeting inside, including a lot of the same people who are behind the now-stopped American Renaissance conferences. To have a white racist group with known terrorists meeting in the Ronald Reagan building the day before September 11th was especially insulting, and infuriated protesters showed up outside, and at one point security guards drew their batons but hurriedly jumped back when a photographer pulled out a tripod that opened the exact same way as their ass. And here's what people had to say outside the National Policy Institute's convention in the Reagan building during their lunch.
How fitting is it that they are at the Ronald Reagan building? A building named after a man who cared nothing about people of color, nothing about the rights of working people, and that's exactly what they're down there promoting. To that point, September 11th, we're going to stand in solidarity with the brothers and sisters up in New York who are taking on your colleagues, like Pam Geller and Richard Spencer, as they go against the Muslim community. It's not going to fly up there, will not fly here. And you are not going to discuss and plan how you going to take us out in any size, shape, or form without us saying something about it. We will have our pay here.
Because of the protesters outside, the racists who were meeting inside at the National Policy Institute were afraid to leave the cover of the Ronald Reagan building. They were afraid to come out behind their ass-baton-wielding security guards and a whole bunch of cops who didn't look too pleased about being asked to protect terrorists the day before the 11th of September.